Call for Action presents Of Consuming Interest, a public service show that discusses scams, deceptive offers, and other consumer concerns. Here's the director of WUSA 9 Call for Action and your host, Shirley Rooker.
It's not a conversation you might want to have, but it's one you should have, and that is talking to your adult children about money. Here to discuss the things you need to tell your children about your finances is Jessica Anderson. She is a associate editor with Kiplinger's Personal Finance Magazine and recently did an article on this subject, which was very informative and very interesting and really makes you think. Jessica, welcome to Of Consuming Interest.
Thank you, Shirley.
Now, this is hard. This is a hard conversation to have. And we've gone through this recently because we just redid our wills and we only have one son, and we sat down with him and we had this conversation. We've had this conversation with him over the years, so it wasn't something totally new. But for somebody who hasn't done this before, where do you start?
I think getting started can kind of be what scares people the most. You know, they're thinking about, you know, nobody wants to think about their own death. Nobody, no child wants to think about their parents leaving them. So it's kind of scary all the way around, and you kind of just have to jump into it. Some of the things that experts have recommended is just use an icebreaker, like current events, something like, you know, Obamacare, and, you know, how that might affect your health care plans later on in life. You kind of use that as a segue into your finances. Or one of the best things that we've found is just having conversations, you know, around family friends and saying, okay, this person's mother just passed away and now the kids are all at each other's throats saying, you know, well, I wanted this and I think mom wanted this. You know, it's a nice way to sit down and say to your kids, we don't want this to happen to you guys.
Right.
You know, let's talk about it now.
Yeah. And I think, too, if you're in the process, as we were, of redoing our wills, not major changes, but we just wanted to make sure our son was updated on what we were doing. And so that kind of event can also be something that you could say to your children, look, we're putting this into place, this, and, you know, you could use that kind of approach as well. At what age do you think we refer to adult children, but where do you think, really, where would you start? I mean, what age? You want them right out of college? You want them when they've worked for a little while? I mean, you want to really talk to your children while you're still young and healthy and not worried about whether or not they're going to have to face this issue in the next year or so.
Yeah, you know, I think one of the things that a lot of the experts recommended was just to start having money conversations in general with your kids at a very young age. You know,
oh, yes.
Going to the grocery store and saying, well, Mom, I want this. Well, you already got, you know, these cookies, so you can't have the chips too because, you know, there's only so much money. And so if you start by having conversations young about money, wrapping them into financial decisions like, you know, buying a new car or something like that, mm-hmm. then money is not a taboo subject and
right.
it won't be something that's as difficult to get into later. As far as the, you know, kind of money talk conversation about your estate planning and stuff, I think that at, you know, around college age or shortly thereafter, you're likely to be in a place where you're looking towards retirement and thinking about, you know, really getting into the meat of these plans yourself. And your kids are at an age where they can really comprehend, you know, some of these things, even though they won't have experienced a lot of the planning yet themselves.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so we start at a young age, and actually that should be an ongoing conversation. You're absolutely right. It shouldn't be something you just, out of the blue, you say, we're going to talk about money,
mm-hmm.
because it's something that affects us in everything that we do. All right, now, let's say we have got the kids together, and it might be a holiday, it might be some event, but I would suspect that it's important to talk to all of them at once. Would that be the case if it's at all possible?
If it's possible, it is really nice to have everyone in the same room because then you're at least presenting the same exact information
right.
to each person at the same time. Now, one of the financial psychologists that I spoke with said, we don't always hear everything the same. You know, we hear through our emotions. And I thought that was
it's
a very
true.
Good point because you can be saying one thing and two people will interpret it completely differently depending on their circumstance and their place within the family kind of dynamic. But yes, if you can get everyone together, great. If you can't, try and have one-on-one conversations, keeping this information the same with each child. And then, you know, perhaps wrap in a quick family meeting the next time you guys are all together and say, Okay, just to recap, this is, you know, what right. we've told all of
well,
you.
Well, you can use Skype. You could use just a phone conversation, conference call with your kids if you can't get them together.
Right.
Because I think the important thing here is that you're saying the same thing to everyone, and every one of them knows that you've said the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, kids can be very competitive. And within a family, they can be very competitive.
They can.
You want to make certain that no one goes away with a different message, or at least, as you say, emotions make a difference in how you hear it. But you want to be sure that what's presented is the same.
Yes, that the information is the same across the board. And, you know, the key to having these conversations, and I'll kind of come back to this as we continue talking, is just always to be honest and open mm-hmm. about your plan and why you made these decisions so that everyone really understands and there aren't any lingering questions.
Right. Well, it seems to me that one of the things that would be very important is, if first off, talking about money. Where is it going? Do you want part of your money to go to a charity, for example? Do you want part of it to go to a relative that isn't a member of the immediate family? Because sometimes we have people that we have special relationships with that aren't necessarily just an immediate family member. So I would think those would be important things to discuss. To me, I would want to sit down with a balance sheet that would show what I own, how much money I've got, where it is, because one of these kids is probably going to end up being the executor if your spouse predeceases you.
Mm-hmm. I think that not everyone is going to want to take such a direct approach, you know, with a kind of ledger sheet, as it were. But just saying, you know.
Or giving some general financial, like
exactly.
I'm in good financial shape. And
that's
right.
what you want to do, is give people an idea. Say, you know, I've saved up, you know, enough to keep me in the lifestyle that I currently have for, you know, X years. And after that, I have long-term care insurance to cover, mm-hmm. you know, those kinds of things.
Oh, that's an important point.
Absolutely. You know, so giving people a framework to work within, and recognizing that, you know, the dollar amounts aren't always as important because they're so likely to change, especially
well,
as the years
true.
Go on.
That is very true. I think you're right. It is more important to do it. I mean, we didn't sit down with a balance sheet with our son. We just kind of gave him generally mm-hmm. some of the ideas of what finances we had and what we were doing with them and how we were setting up our will. So you're right. I don't think you need to go penny by penny. And I really didn't mean to sound that specific. But I think you need to let them know. Are they going to have anything left over, hopefully?
Yeah. Or, you know, in the case of some people, are you going to need their help?
Yeah,
you
exactly.
know, and that's a very embarrassing and tough topic for a parent to address with a child, that they will need their help. But, you know, you really owe it to your kids to say,
you gotta be
look,
honest.
If this is the situation, you know, I'm really sorry. We thought we had planned well, you know, but
right.
this and this happened. And now this is where we are, you know, so that
that's
they
true.
Can start working those things into their own financial plans.
Okay.
And that's kind
you're,
of the,
you're right.
the basis of this conversation, is so that everyone knows what they can kind of expect to start making their own plans for the future.
You got it. Let's just take a brief pause here to let our listeners know they're tuned into Of Consuming Interest. I'm Shirley Rooker. My guest is Jessica Anderson. She's an associate editor of Kiplinger's Personal Finance Magazine. And we're talking about that difficult, perhaps, but very necessary conversation with your kids about your finances and how you plan to divvy it up after your death. And that is not an easy conversation, Jessica. I mean,
no,
it
not.
Really is not. I think it's probably easier for parents as they age to look at it and start that conversation with their kids. I think the kids may be having questions, and they probably would find it much more difficult to go to mom and dad and say, you know, what's going to happen?
Exactly. Nobody wants to say,
so
hey, you, what
the,
am I going to
yeah,
get?
Exactly.
You know, it sounds greedy. And I think that kids, in addition to being wary of, you know, addressing the subject of their parents' eventual death with them, are just thinking, you know, I don't want it to come off the wrong way.
That's right. But so consequently, parents should put themselves in the position of starting this conversation.
They should.
I think that's a very interesting way to do it, because we often think about, oh, kids worrying about their senior parents and,
mm-hmm.
you know, so, well, parents should turn that around and say, let's help the kids to get through what is going to be a difficult time for them.
Exactly.
The loss of their parents. Okay, so we're going to start at an early age to talk about finances, and we're going to gradually work up to this. When kids get into their 20s, it's certainly a time that you could sit down and start having conversations like this. All right. So specifics, you're saying we don't have to be specific, but we can be general in saying this is our financial health, et cetera, et cetera. But now there's going to come a time, somebody's going to have to be an executor of this will. How do you choose among kids, or maybe you don't want to have one of your kids to be the executor? How do you do that? That's a hard conversation to have. And if you go into a family and you don't choose the oldest one to do it because they're irresponsible, it's going to be a difficult conversation.
Yeah, you know, and it all comes down to your family dynamic. You know, if your family is very close, you know, I've seen situations where, you know, the couple has two children and they make them co-executors so that they don't have to choose. And, you know, one person is responsible for, you know, say the healthcare side of things and one person is responsible for the money side of things. Mm-hmm. If you do want to choose an executor within your family, think about, you know, which of your kids is best suited for this. Someone that is incredibly organized or has experience with financial matters.
Right.
It, you know, it might even come down to just who is physically closest to you and has the easiest access to your paperwork. Some of those things are things to think about. And if you really feel like, you know, none of your kids is ultimately that responsible, or you just prefer to not leave them with the burden of having to deal with all of your finances.
And it can be a burden.
It can be, you know, and that's something that should be conveyed when you're having this conversation with them.
I think part of that, too, would be determined by the size of your estate.
Right.
You know, if you have a sizable estate, you probably should bring in someone on the outside.
Right. Bringing in a trustee can really help just ease everything
smooth
for
everything.
The family. Right.
Now, what about when you get to the things like I have a spinning wheel that belonged to my great great grandmother. And to me, that is it has probably no real monetary value, but it has an awful lot of family nostalgic value. How do you go about dividing? You can't split the spinning wheel down the middle. Now, I only have one child. I hope he values it as much as I do. but how do you go about choosing, or do you let the children choose what they want? Because I think this is a conversation you should have also.
Absolutely. No, I mean, you don't want the kids fighting over anything after you're gone. You know, saying, Mom would have wanted this, or Dad, you know, would have wanted this. Leaving things open to interpret that way is just difficult for everyone. So, you know, when you're starting to have some of these conversations, or even in advance of that, ask your kids, say, you know, is there anything that's really important to you? You know, if you know that there's something, you know, that one kid really likes, or, you know, would be important to them to keep, you know, you can certainly spell all of that out, you know, in a will or another document, just saying, this is how we want to divide things, but absolutely get their input on it, because something that you might think they would really, you know, want, they might not ultimately care that much about.
Yeah, yeah. I've heard people say that what they were planning on doing was having their kids draw lots, and then the one that gets the highest number or lowest number or however you want to do it would go first in choosing an item, then the next one in choosing an item. And, you know, just kind of
a white elephant of sorts for the house.
Well, it would give your kids a chance to choose whatever they happen to have that would, if in fact somebody hasn't already chosen it.
Yeah.
But it's a way that you wouldn't have to decide.
Mm-hmm.
Let them decide.
Yeah.
So to me, that takes away some of the stress.
That sounds like a really good idea.
You know, emotional stress, I think, that you're finding there. Well, now, what about when we start talking about health issues? And then there is the issue of whether or not the parent is competent. How do you deal? How do you set this up for your children to deal with it? I mean, again, the conversation is the big thing, isn't it?
It is. And I think that when you're discussing your health, as it's almost as touchy a topic as the money, make it clear that you have made a plan. They, you know, that you have an advanced directive, and that, you know, these are your wishes, that you want to make them aware at every step what you would want, you know, in case of X, in case of Y. You know, I do not want to be resuscitated. I do not want extraordinary measures, these kinds of things, so that your kids are really in the loop on your wishes. Because when it comes time, you know, God forbid, if something like that were to happen, you don't want them sitting in the hospital room going, I don't know what they would want.
Or feeling guilt at whatever decision they make, because that to me would be the biggest thing of all.
Yeah. And then you're gone and they'll always feel guilty about it.
Right. Right. So you just really need to set this up. This is a hard thing to do.
It is.
Have you had this conversation with your parents?
I have not. And
Jessica,
as an only child,
we're going to speak to you.
I know.
You're the only child.
When I started writing this story, I told them, I said, guys, we need to have some talks. And, you know, we talked about, you know, some of the things, but we haven't gotten into the meat of it yet. I think it's just, it's coming though.
It's hard. But
it is.
But I would think in writing the article, you can share with your parents some of the things that you learned.
Yeah.
And some of the things that came out of it and some of the questions I'm sitting here asking you.
Mm-hmm.
You know? But I think all of those things can be a springboard for doing that kind of a conversation.
They can be.
So, yeah. Yes, it is difficult, though. Let's just take a brief pause to let our listeners know that they're tuned into Of Consuming Interest. I'm Shirley Rooker. My guest is Jessica Anderson. She is an associate editor of Kiplinger's Personal Finance Magazine. And we're talking about the difficult conversation with your kids, discussing your finances after you have left this earth, after you've died. Let's just say it. What if your choice is to give one of your children more money than the other?
That is an incredibly good question because it's so hard. And this is something that can really divide families. As I said before, a lot of this comes down to your dynamic. If you've got, you know, one child that has special needs and may need, you know, more money to kind of cover their needs throughout their life, hopefully the others in your family would be understanding about that.
Yeah, that's a situation that I think is a little different.
It is. You know, but there are some families that just decide, you know, not special needs, quote unquote, but this person, you know, this child is special. They don't
have
as much earning potential.
Well, you say you have one child who did this fantastic startup in the electronics industry and they or communications, whatever, and they sell it. Mm-hmm. And they make a ton of money. And then you have another child who works very hard and who's just as valuable to you.
Right.
How do you, but they don't have the money.
Exactly. So
that's tough.
It is. It's really tough. And that's going to be a really difficult decision for you personally. And, you know, we are not here to tell you
how to do it.
You know, that's up to you. But
right.
the important thing is to make clear your decision process
mm-hmm.
in, you know, working these things out and to have the conversation at that point be a little bit of a two-way street. If somebody
right.
says, well, I don't understand, you know, this doesn't make sense to me, explain your reasoning. And then, you know, you have an opportunity to change your mind.
Right.
That's the great part about all of this is
yes.
that it's just a game
yes.
plan. It can be changed
exactly.
at any point in time.
Well, as circumstances change.
Exactly.
You just have to make sure you do keep your will updated.
Right. You don't want the situation where you've got, you know, your kids having, you know, someone to go to, you know, when they're in grade school, and
mm-hmm.
that's still in your will when they're 25.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You are so, so right. Okay, now, you've got to make sure that your kids know where you keep all your documents. And probably you'll have a lawyer that you've used, or, well, yes, you'll have a lawyer, most likely, who's written this all up. They probably will keep a copy of everything.
Mm-hmm.
But do you want to give copy of your will to one of your kids? Do you want to put it in a safe and give them all the combination in a safe deposit box in the bank? Or where, because these are documents you need to guard carefully.
You do. And you want to make sure that they're in a safe place in your home. But one of the things that some of the experts recommended was not to put it in a safety deposit box, because if for some reason
you can't get it out,
yeah. You know, or if you have to provide a death certificate or, you know, for any reason that it's difficult to get to, you want to make sure that you've got that document on hand, ready to go. And something that one of the people recommended was to put all of these financial and legal documents in, you know, just a plain white binder, put it, you know, on a shelf or in a desk drawer or something. Let your family members know where it is.
And mark for what it is.
Actually, don't mark it.
Don't mark it.
That keeps it away from prying eyes at a cocktail party or something.
Okay.
You know, someone that might just be a neighbor that might be curious about your plans.
Oh, you kidding.
Oh, we've heard stories.
Really? Yes.
You know, or burglars or, you know, anything like
okay,
that.
Okay, that's a good
so,
point.
So, you know, it's just, it looks innocuous enough, but everything's together and can be easily located. So you've got your family coming in and you say, look for the white binder. There doesn't have anything on it.
Mm-hmm.
That'll be where all the important stuff is.
Yeah, that is a good point, not to mark it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and
I was surprised myself. I mean, I'm a label maker, so.
Yeah. I label everything, so I'll look at it and I'll go, oh, that's what's in there. But yeah, I can understand the value if you have people come in here, clean your house, paint your house, whatever.
Right. You don't want that sensitive information and a lot of the times that, you know, lawyers that will draw up these things will put them in a real fancy, you know, binder that really looks like it's
just
something important.
Important.
Exactly. It says, please come take me off the shelf and read me.
That's right. It's none of your business, but do read me. Anything else that we need to talk about? We only have a couple of minutes.
Other things that should go in that binder are definitely a list of all of your accounts, from banking and credit accounts to bills, anything related to money coming in or going out, along with online access information. Because when you pass on, you do not want your kids cobbling stuff together, you know, and with the advent of online banking, you don't always get your statements in the mail.
You need passwords.
Right.
You need passwords for your bank accounts, mm-hmm. for your charge accounts.
For your bills.
For your bills. And if you do a lot of online banking and a lot of paying bills online.
Right. And, you know, your investment accounts, retirement accounts, these kinds of things. It's like there's so many puzzle pieces to your financial picture.
I would think that should be put in a small safe that everybody has a combination to.
Yeah. That is something that should be a little bit better protected than the binder.
Yeah, because it's going to have all this information that would give people access to your life.
Right.
So you don't want a burglar getting that.
Exactly. So maybe in the binder, you've got a sheet of paper that says, this is where, you know, that information is. The other thing that you want in there is a list of all your important contacts, your financial planner, your lawyer, mm-hmm. the people that helped you put this plan together mm-hmm. that can then help your heirs unravel everything later.
Well, it's, yes, because when you're going through an emotionally stressful time, you don't need the added burden of having to worry about settling all of these issues.
Right. You don't want to have to worry about the bill collectors and, you know, right. paying the mortgage and figuring out what other accounts, you know, mom and dad had floating around out there. That's my biggest thing with
now,
my parents.
What if we only have a couple of minutes? What if one of the kids says, I want the house? And the others don't, or the others say, well, I want it sold. I guess that child that wants the house would have to be the one to figure out how they're going to pay for it.
Right.
Because they would only be entitled to a portion of it.
Exactly.
So I guess a lot of what we're talking about just involves common sense, doesn't it?
It does. And it
there are common sense solutions to a lot of these things if we can get beyond the emotional aspect of it.
And separating the emotional from the common mm-hmm. sense is the hardest part.
Yeah, that would be extremely hard. Now, your article, is it available online, Jessica?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
Kiplinger.com.
Kiplinger.com. And the article is entitled, The Money Talk You Must Have. I like that title because, yes, it's you must have it.
Yeah. Yeah. There's no way around it. It's really important.
It's not an option.
Don't delay.
It's the money talk that you must have. But the important things, as you said, start early. Be frank about it. You don't have to speak in absolute general specifics, but you should generally give the kids a feeling for your overall financial health,
mm-hmm.
whether or not you're going to need help from them ultimately.
Or any help that you might be able to give them.
To give them, of course, that's what you're hoping. But if you can't do it, then you should just be very candid about it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, you've certainly given us a lot to think about. The website is kiplinger.com. And the article is The Money Talk You Must Have. And that's with your kids. Jessica, thank you so much for joining us. Jessica is Associate Editor of Kiplinger's Personal Finance Magazine. I'm Shirley Rooker. You've been listening to Of Consuming Interest right here on 1500 AM. Thank you.
Of Consuming Interest is a public service program presented by WUSA 9 Call for Action, hosted by Shirley Rooker. Call for Action is an international nonprofit network of hotlines which offer free and confidential assistance. If you have a complaint, contact Call for Action at 301-652-HELP. That's 301-652-HELP.